Welcome to the Hustle Up podcast, the podcast that shares the unique stories of startups, side hustles, and the self-employed. I'm Josh Burrell, and today I'm speaking to Gaia Beck, the founder of Cocktails and Conversation, which is a London dating event and networking company. Last year, she also launched Chipping In, a platform to help children crowdfund from friends and family as co-founder. How are you today, Gaia?
Hi, I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thank you for joining. Hopefully you're all doing well and managed to stay away from COVID at the moment.
Well, we've had it every opportunity we've got. So oh, gosh. I think our antibodies are firing at the moment.
Good stuff. So I always like to take it back to the beginning on this podcast and just want to find out a bit more about how life was for you growing up. So your family life, where did you live? What were you interested in? And were you quite entrepreneurial? And did you have business ideas growing up?
You know what? So I grew up in Fulham.
Okay.
My mum is from St. Lucia, and she met my dad at university. He was a lecturer, and they set up home and had three children. So we came from a real mixed family. My dad's Jewish, very Jewish. My mum's very Caribbean. So we had the best of both worlds, basically. So growing up, was I entrepreneurial? I was, probably in all the worst ways. I was always scheming. So if I could think of a money-making scheme, that was literally me. I probably could have ended up in Borstal, but it was like, it would be something like a car washing scheme, knocking on neighbors' doors with no concept of how to wash cars, just like a bottle of Jif and a bucket. Even if it came to something like trick-or-treating, you know, we'd just change masks and recircle. It was just nice. If there was this little scam I could think of to make extra money or extra sweets, then I was all over that as a child.
Resourceful as well then.
Very resourceful, yeah.
And were you quite switched on at school? What sort of things were you really interested in at school, and what did you want to do when you were younger?
You know, I was very bright in school. I was bright, but I would try and hide it sometimes because I realized I would get teased a bit if I was shown what a sort of nerd I was. So sometimes I would pretend I didn't know answers and just try to fit in with the other girls.
Okay.
But yeah, I was really into reading. I was really into like dressmaking for my dolls and just reading and sewing and things like that, really, I liked as a girl.
Okay. And what sort of things did you study? Did you go on to college after compulsory education, or did you get into the world of work?
Yeah, I went to university and I studied English and film.
Okay.
So, yeah, English, again, it led on from the reading. The film was a sort of advertising, film making kind of class. So I think it all leads into what I still do now.
Yeah. And what uni was that?
It was called TVU at the time. I don't know what it's called now.
I think it might be called University of West London, but yeah, Thames Valley Uni, isn't it?
It changed its name so many times.
Yeah. So in terms of after uni, did you go into the world of work? Did you have any dreams of working for yourself?
Well, I literally got my first job before I even got my graduation. I mean, it wasn't my first job. I worked actually from about 13 was my first job. But my first job out of uni was in car sales. And I think that was an amazing sort of experience into sales. I don't think you would ever learn more about sales than selling secondhand cars.
Yeah.
So you really learn from these old full lifetime salesmen, you know, and they kind of teach you the psychology of selling, who to sell to, who's ready to buy, who's not ready to buy, psychological tricks. The company was so shady in actual fact that they were actually on what was that program that would sort of go undercover into workplaces and show you their bad practices?
I think I know what you mean. There was loads of sort of BBC documentaries.
It was the big one. I think
Panorama?
It was not Panorama. It could have been. It was one of those shows that was on ITV or BBC. And we were actually on that while I was working there.
Oh, no.
And it was sort of showing how psychologically they trick people into having really questionable, I think they're called PPE deals.
Okay.
So basically the owner came and gave us a talk one day and said, look, I don't care if I'm selling cars or washing machines. The concept is the same. Get people onto a payment plan. And that kind of piqued my interest because I realized that being emotionally connected to what you're selling isn't necessary. Mm-hmm. I used to think you have to really like the thing you're selling, but you don't. You just have to give someone something they really want. And if they, it's about the customer, it's not about you.
Yeah. And then where did you go from the car salesman kind of route?
I mean, I didn't stay there long. I think I had outgrown being a shady person at this at this age. And I was like, well, no, I can't in good conscience do this. That's when I left there. I got a job in a PR firm. Okay. And it sort of took me a bit more down the road of advertising and traditional PR, and sort of, it was a very glamorous job. It was a PR firm for film. And so I went into that. And from there, I decided to set my own event company up. Events were a lot of what we did there. So I kind of learned on the periphery of how to move into the world of luxury events.
Okay. And what year did you start the events company? Was that preceding Cocktails and Conversation, or was that the start of that?
Yeah, it was preceding it. I mean, Cocktails and Conversation is relatively recent.
Okay.
At this point, it had nothing to do with dating. It was sheerly events. So I was given some very interesting advice by someone. And it was back in the time when, before we were so spiritually conscious as we are now. But the concept was, I said, you know, I want to do events. I'm unhappy working for other people. And I guess I have to go and interview in an event company and find a job. And they said, you know, that's not the right outlook. Okay. You have to ask the universe. So I'm like, you what?
What do you mean by that?
How'd you do that? So they kind of went over this principle. We've all heard of asking the universe now, right?
Yeah.
But at this point, it's like, what are you talking about? And so he really explained the concept of asking the universe. And I thought it was nonsense, I'm not going to lie. But I didn't have an alternative.
Yeah.
So I followed his advice to the letter. And I had my first booking in about a week.
Brilliant.
And it was just nonstop from there, to be honest. And I set up an events company. And people just honestly, I just told people, this is what I did. Here's my website. Here are my business cards. And then I was just booked. And every booking I had was good. So someone else would refer me and book me. And yeah, and that's how I started.
And were these sort of brand events, or were they just a large mix? Were you doing any like international things at that point?
No, they were all London based. So okay. My first booking was in a club to dress their venue for Halloween.
Okay.
I did that, and the club gave me a contract to run their events. Then other clubs started to ask, and then other businesses. Everywhere I worked really hard.
Yeah.
They would flourish and it would become quite known. Why is this place doing so well? And then I had contracts, more contracts than I could handle. So I had to then employ staff and get a team. And yeah, so that's basically how it grew. It probably grew exponentially like that within about a year.
Oh, that's excellent. And what were some of the clubs you worked at in London, or some of the venues that you really enjoyed?
So I worked at probably all the major West End clubs. I don't think any of them are still open. There were clubs like Studio Valbone, Vendome, yeah. Mayfair Club, some clubs in Kensington and Chelsea. So I'd run a lot of the celebrity events there. So we'd book or fly in celebrities from America. That was always challenging. They had huge riders and
yeah.
They had a lot of people that would turn up with them. And sometimes the club wouldn't even allow them in, even though we'd paid for them. And it was a lot of racism in clubs then.
Yeah.
So navigating that at the time was probably the most stressful part.
Just touching on that racism point, do you feel like it's improved much in London clubs over the years?
I don't experience it at all anymore. I think that could be a combination of it's improved and I don't work with clubs that express that type of mentality.
Yeah.
So it could still happen, but I do steer clear of those kind of clubs. When I'm invited to work at a club or a venue, let's say, I don't necessarily work at clubs anymore. I do a bit of a background check, and I make sure that they have some kind of policy around inclusion.
That's really good. And I guess there's other sort of businesses that probably don't make those checks, and you often hear about rappers or footballers getting turned away just for mundane reasons, which may sometimes just go back to them being young, black, or just from different background.
Exactly. I mean, I make an effort to ensure that my guests are welcomed and they feel represented in my advertising, and they feel encouraged to come no matter what race they are. So
yeah.
It would be ridiculous if they turned up and the venue didn't welcome them as well. So yeah, it's it comes from both sides. It comes from myself and it comes from the venue.
So you've talked a little bit about setting up a website and hiring staff, but what were some of the challenges of starting up your own events business, and how did you go about finding reliable staff or ones that you knew could deliver your vision?
It was really hard. It's still really hard, to be honest. I don't know. I can say I've mastered that. Okay. Yeah. You know, when you find people that work well, I hire a lot of entertainers and I really keep a good relationship with the people that work well because they're like gold dust. But it's a really tricky industry to staff because people are so transient, and finding event staff that it's their passion and they earn enough to stick with it, it's hard. So you do find that I think a lot of the time the staff underestimate what hard work it actually is.
Yeah.
And it's very challenging emotionally because you have to be able to speak to people all the time. And young people who often are the ones that want to go into events can get quite overwhelmed with having to have conversations with so many people from so many different industries and backgrounds. And yeah, they just burn out really fast, unfortunately.
Okay. Sounds like it can be a lot, especially like you say, for the younger people who maybe if it's their first job, even it might be a bit of a baptism of fire.
Definitely, I'd say that's a good way to explain it.
Okay. And then moving on to cocktails and conversation. So were there any other names you thought of firstly?
Do you know, I'll be honest, I still don't like the name. I still don't like it, but it's stuck.
Yeah.
It is what it is now. So I always struggle with names for companies. Now there's too much branding for me to change it. I think recently we've kind of rebranded and the logo is just CNC.
Yeah.
So we kind of fly with that. Whenever someone hears it, they know what it is.
Yeah, it gives it away.
People are very comfortable with it. So there it stays.
And what was your first events company called?
I think it was my name.
Okay.
And I can remember there was a flame above the eye. I really liked that logo.
Do you have like a specific designer you go to every time you want a new logo or you start a new business?
Well, luckily, my best friend is also a graphic designer.
Okay.
So he didn't actually design my recent stuff, but he designed a lot of my early stuff. So it was really on point.
It's all about who you know, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. And starting out cocktails and conversation. So you obviously had the events side of things down. How did you then want to move into the dating space? What made you want to go down that route?
Well, it was something that was quite passionate for me at the time. I became single myself and I just started organizing events, and the people that came were single. And I saw this real need for, they were people who were my age at the time. They were in their 30s, and club nights for them were a little bit of a younger crowd.
Yeah.
So, but they still wanted the experience to go out and mix and mingle and meet people, but with like-minded people. But they really needed to feel supported.
Yeah.
They needed to feel that it was for them. And often they wanted someone to talk to because their circle of friends had got smaller. It wasn't all about coming out to pick up.
Yeah.
It was about forming connections, making friendships, really. And it felt great to be able to offer the people that, because I understood what it was that they were going through at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just really meaningful to be able to do that. It felt more meaningful than just to provide a club space for people to come out to party.
Okay. And from sort of your first event to now, how many people did you have at the very first one, and how many people would you get at an average one now?
So when it started, it was such a drop. For me, it was humbling, to say the least. So I had this huge event company. We were running these big events in all the clubs I'd mentioned with celebrities. And I mean, these were A-list celebrities that were coming. So it was a big deal.
Yeah.
And I ran it with my partner at the time. We broke up. It was like War of the Roses kind of breakup. Gosh. And the company went up in flames with the relationship. And I started as like a sub promoter for the people that used to work for me.
Okay.
And so I literally had to go cap in hand to people. Thankfully, I had been pretty nice to people, so they were okay back to me. But I had to start under the people who used to work for me. And that's how I went back into events with, and it was me and like an oddball bunch of singles. Honestly, they couldn't have been more peculiar. I like them. Yeah. But and they would literally just walk behind me and, you know, and in would roll and this little crew grew and grew. Okay. And yeah, that's sort of how I got my foot back in the door, so to speak.
And what can people expect from a Cocktails and Conversation event? What sets you apart from other events or dating apps, for instance?
I think we've reached the peak of luxury dating events, I would say. Most of our events are black tie now. We have between 1 and 300 guests. It's not just dating events. We're organising a really big fashion event in February, which we've been doing for a while. It's all about sustainability and representation. So we work with companies to make sure there is representation on the catwalk, not just racially, but people from different genders as well, and people who are disabled in like many different forms.
Okay.
And we give 50% of the profits to the Bullock Inclusion, who help to include sport and fashion. So it's really about all the events are there to really support a community.
That's brilliant. And the logistics of Cocktails and Conversation. So I assume there's a business model, you're making money from it somehow. I think you offer membership. Like, how would you pitch your business in terms of cost, and how many events a year do you run?
So we run about 20 events a year. So all the major holidays, Christmas party,
yeah.
Valentine's is our next one coming up, and those are the big ones. So there'll be about 200 guests at those ones, and it's largely on ticket sales, and we've reached a really great price point. So tickets are about £50 each.
Okay.
And then there's the membership as well. It's a yearly membership, and you can come to as many events as you like with that one. So yeah, that's largely, I'd say it's a split 60-40 between ticket sales and membership.
So is it a lot of venues you've worked with before? And I guess, is it just bars, or do you have other spaces that you use?
I generally work with private members clubs.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I book the whole venue out. When I started, I would have like a little area at the bar. But now we'll book the whole club because we need the space for 200 people, and we need to make sure everyone inside is like-minded. So the fashion show, for instance, we've booked a huge church in central London. Logistically, that's a nightmare. We have to get licensing for a bar, and we have to put the whole production in, sound, lighting. But it's worth it in the end, but it's just a lot of work. When we work with clubs, I try to work with the same clubs.
Yeah.
Working with new clubs is always a nightmare.
I was going to say, have you had any terrible experiences with specific venues? Obviously, you don't have to name them.
I mean, I would name them.
You can if you want.
I mean, the problem with new venues is sometimes some are run more professionally than others.
Yeah.
So, you kind of do get a feel when it's going to be less than professional.
Yeah.
But with the established private members clubs that you've heard of, they're normally run like a well-oiled machine, and they're a pleasure to work with.
Brilliant.
New venues can take a little while to find their feet.
Okay. In terms of publicising and promoting the event, how do you find that side of things? Do you lead on that? Do you have a colleague that works with that sort of side of things? And also, do you reach out to celebrities and influencers, or is it just organic in terms of who turns up to your events?
Depends on the event.
Okay.
So with a fashion show, we have lots of influencers. It's probably mostly an influencer-pushed event.
Mm-hmm.
We work with influencers that have a real ethos in sustainability or diversity. So that's a lot of fun. With the singles events, no influencers. Advertising is tricky because Facebook doesn't like advertising for singles.
Right.
There's something about adult material and the word single and so on that Facebook doesn't approve of. So you have to be quite clever in how you advertise on social media.
Mm-hmm.
But there are always ways around it. I mean, I lead with it myself. I don't need to spend a huge amount at this point on advertising because my reputation is strong enough and my following is also strong enough.
Yeah, and I guess the word of mouth, your reputation over the years will have really built up.
Yeah, so I already have a big database which grows. The website's now quite mature, so it gets hits. I spent a lot of time on blog posts with keywords, and it's a constant sort of staying on top of organic traffic.
Yeah.
So you don't have to spend a lot of money on advertising.
Okay. So growth-wise, how have you found the growth from starting out to now? Do the events kind of run themselves? Is it a bit more seamless? Was it more challenging at the start?
I think what you have to do is know your audience. So I know my audience love luxury. So the more luxurious the venue, the more exclusive the wording is. And it's really important the way, the language that I use, which is where I probably lean back onto my degree in English. Media has been something that really supported me. So when I'm writing, I don't write the description the way I speak.
Yeah.
I mean, it's flowery. It's meant to tantalize you when you read it. It's meant to make you feel really excited. Like, ooh, this sounds exciting. You know, that's, and the venue has to lean to this. So I like iconic places.
Okay.
So if I always feel like if I can mesh something which is iconic and exciting, and it's a real experience.
Okay.
Hence, I love to do masked balls. I love to do things which are black tie. I like to incorporate performances. And I like people to know that when they can look forward to this for at least a month.
Yeah. Brilliant. The ticketing for the events, is it all in-house or do you use external platforms to sell the tickets?
So I use Eventbrite.
Okay.
I've used probably all the major ticket selling platforms, but I just find Eventbrite is... For me, it's the best one.
Yeah. And they don't take like a massive cut of every ticket?
They do. They probably take the most.
Oh, no.
But they're also the most efficient.
Okay.
And I just find them the easiest. And they also have their own traction. I think one thing I learned with ticketing, and I went to quite a few seminars on this, it's things like looking for the least friction. So Eventbrite has the least amount of clicks from the page to purchase.
Okay.
And because it's the most used, at least by my audience, they already have their details saved into Eventbrite. Hence, they can usually make the purchase with one click.
Yeah.
I can embed it directly into my website. I can embed it directly into Facebook. There's not a lot of other platforms that allow you that much tech ability. I don't think any of them do.
Yeah. I think from my personal experience, Eventbrite, as a person going to events, has been the easiest. If I remember my login, that is, I can usually get in, just type my name in, type my email address, and then I have a ticket usually to a free event at least.
Exactly. And that's the point when I say it's all about the guest. I think the user experience is from them reading the description and feeling tantalized to making it as seamless as possible to purchase their ticket. And then obviously attending, you have to preempt the questions they're going to ask and already have them answered. So there's nothing stopping them in their mind from attending your event.
Yeah. And I've seen some strong FAQs on your website as well. So lots of information.
Go hard with the FAQs. I realized that my guests are quite discerning. If the more of their questions you can answer and put them at ease, the more likely they're going to pick your event over someone else's.
Excellent. So the name is Cocktails and Conversation. Do you cater for non-drinkers and sort of the growing trend in sober people, or would you consider
doing... I don't know about this trend.
I know a few people that have gone completely sober, particularly since the pandemic. So obviously less going out and people who are not going to the office as much. Some people have just completely knocked alcohol on the head. But would you do an alcohol-free event in the future?
No. That's just not the ethos of what it is I do.
Yeah. And do you find that alcohol makes people more free, or what's the benefit of the alcohol?
The alcohol is the reason the venues like me.
Yeah.
So if my guests aren't spending money at the venue's bar, then the amount I'd have to spend to hire the venue, I'd have to pass on to my customers. Tickets would have to be more like £100. Mm-hmm. So for me to tell you, in order for you not to drink, I'm going to have to double your ticket price. Who would want that?
It makes sense. Okay. When you put it like that, it sounds interesting. I'm sure there are spaces for non-drinkers as well.
You can go to the park. I mean, there are people that organise events in the park. It just won't be my event.
Yeah. I think with the sort of luxury that you offer, alcohol is probably something that people will expect anyway, even if they're not drinking that night or not drinking, but they probably still buy some drinks.
I mean, I think the most important marketing know-how that I've learned and I stick to is you can't cater for everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, I cater for drinkers. It is what it is. If you want an alcohol-free event, you know, you'll have to find a different one to go to.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to drag up any bad memories, but what has been your worst event or the event that has gone really badly?
I mean, I think, an event that's gone badly. I think there have been events where, in cocktails and conversations, you're talking about in my lifetime of events.
Let's go with lifetime.
Oh, good. When I used to work in West End clubs, I mean, people sometimes got killed. So that would be the worst.
Yeah.
In cocktails and conversations, never been any violence, thank God.
That's good.
The worst thing that can happen is there'll be an imbalance of women and men.
Okay.
And you have a room full of women and they're pretty annoyed.
Yeah.
So that's literally as bad as it gets now. So it's a much quieter life with single events than it used to be for club events.
Yeah. And I guess a lot of it will be how you deal with any issues anyway. So it wouldn't be this event was bad from start to finish. It might be this one thing has not gone how you planned it, but you've gone and done this, which has dealt with it.
I can't whip up more men. But usually I have become pretty good at making sure it's balanced.
Yeah.
So recently when I say recently, in the last couple of years, that hasn't happened at all.
Okay.
But there were times when it did. And if there's too many men, usually, you know, it's not as bad as when there's too many women, to be honest. Women are more vocal about their annoyance.
Yes, I can almost imagine the scene, to be fair.
Yeah, so I really ensure that that doesn't happen. I mean, I think if I keep my female guests happy, everybody's happy.
And do you get analytics of sort of who's bought a ticket and what gender they are?
I do. So for the big ones, I do separate the female and the men's tickets. And once the female tickets always sell first because men buy last minute. So I cap the ticket sales on women and then men buy later.
The men being last minute sounds about right. One thing I haven't asked, but are these fully heterosexual events?
The singles events currently are heterosexual.
Mm-hmm.
I do have people from the LGBTQ plus community that attend. I think they're more often if their friend has come along and they join them, or they just like the sound of the event, especially if it's something like a polo match.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to attend. I want to branch into LGBTQ plus events. I just haven't managed to yet, but I do see it in the near future.
That's really good to hear. And then have you had any success stories of people who have found love at your events?
Of course, I've been doing this for years. There's love coming out of my ears, to be honest. Love, babies, marriages. Uh-huh. I mean, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
The events are designed to make people feel comfortable, and when people are comfortable, it really helps them form a connection with somebody else.
And how do you feel when you get those success stories or the email saying, oh, we've been married, or we've got a baby on the way?
I mean, it honestly warms my heart. The thing I like the most is that they felt like taking the time to reach out to let me know, because I don't get to talk to everybody that comes. And it's lovely that they come and find me on social media to let me know that they're in love. And it's all going, you know, the way I hope it goes when I put the event together. So that's the end goal is... Of course, I want to make a profit, but the end goal is that I help people find love in the process.
Yeah, but not too much love, because then no one will come to the events.
Couples have started coming to my events.
Okay.
This is just, people like the sound of them.
Yeah.
And some of my single guests are getting frustrated because there were couples there. I mean, I can't discriminate. If people in love can come.
Okay.
It's life, isn't it?
The way you've described it, it does sound enticing. And I got married last year, so yeah.
Oh,
I don't want to.
Congratulations.
I don't want to get in the way of any singles, but it does sound like a fun night out.
I think as long as we keep it to under like 20% couples, a few couples are fine.
Okay. And do you get regulars that come back to every event, like singles wise?
Yeah, I do. They're like I will call them my friends now.
Okay.
They come, and there are a lot of single people that aren't ready for a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they just want somewhere to go and meet people who are like them. They want to see the same faces. As I said, we are a community. So I'd say about 30% of people at any event, I know them. I know them by name. And it's lovely to see them again and again.
And on this podcast, a few episodes back, I had the founders of Lilt, which is a voice first dating app. And they are looking to move away from disposable dating, as they called it. Do you think there's an issue with things like apps and people just wanting to swipe and quickly hook up with someone? Or do you think that there'll always be a place for people that want to find real love?
I mean, of course, there's always a place for people to want to find real love, or the world would just end up standing still, wouldn't it? We'd all be extinct. But It's definitely a dilemma that dating apps have exacerbated, really. We can't blame the apps. We have to also blame the users of the apps. Mm-hmm. So it goes hand in hand. I mean, I generally tell people who join up as members that they should pause on the apps to get the most out of the events. You should feel excited about coming out and meeting new people. This shouldn't be your fifth date of the week.
Yeah.
But they are addictive and they have been built to be addictive. So in that hand, you have to blame the apps.
Yeah. And I guess you don't want people at the events with their phones out swiping and being like, oh, that person is in my radius.
Do you know, I think there's a place to combine events and tech. Mm-hmm. I think it goes hand in hand these days, especially. People have become more introverted. So it doesn't hurt to offer them a way to communicate more easily. But it's just so much better to come out to an event and meet people without pressure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think apps should offer events, and I think events should sometimes offer a tech way to keep in touch.
And on that topic, did you have to pivot at all during the pandemic when we're in lockdowns and when events were banned? Did you do anything virtually?
Yes and no. With events, no. that's when I actually launched my tech company, Chippin'. It was a lockdown pivot.
Brilliant.
So yeah, that was why that came along.
And before we go into Chipping In, I just wanted to ask, finally, on Cocktails and Conversation, do you have your team or anyone that you particularly like to shout out for supporting you on that journey?
Well, do you know what? Who I'd like to shout out? I'd say the team at Kindred, which is where I do most of my events. They're fantastic. And they've been like my favorite venue to work with. And also, funny enough, my developer at Chipping In, called David, has also become one of my favorite hosts. He pops along sometimes and hosts, and everybody likes David when he's there. So he is a man of many talents.
Okay. I didn't think about hosting. I just thought of like all these people in a room just chatting. I didn't really think about that. But I, on my first ever episode, I had one of my good friends, Ram the MC, who's actually a master of ceremonies, does lots of weddings and stuff. So I might have to put you two in touch for any future opportunities. Yeah.
Amazing hosts are like the backbone of events like this.
Brilliant. So you've mentioned Chipping In. You run that as a co-founder. How have you found it, firstly, juggling the two businesses?
It's really hard. It's hard because they're so different.
Yeah.
And going into the mindset of each one, it's really, really challenging.
So how does Chipping In work, and how did the idea of that come to you during lockdown?
So Chipping In is a crowdfunder for children. It was built so they could raise money for a gift, but it's turned into something a bit bigger. So children can raise money for anything they like, if it's a charitable cause or an entrepreneurial idea. So that's basically what Chipping In is. It came to us because in lockdown, we were going to lots of Zoom parties. We wanted to gift the person. We were inevitably just coming up with the same few first page gifts on Amazon, which really weren't necessarily what the child wanted.
Yeah.
My own son would get numerous gifts that he'd already got. And also, we just ended up storing them under the bed. And we're quite big on sustainability.
Yeah.
And we realized that this kind of plastic waste wasn't unique to us as a family. And the only way to tackle it was to look for a solution. And hence, Chipping In came along.
Brilliant. And is your son your co-founder, or do you have another co-founder?
Well, he is, I want to say on paper, but not on paper. He's not
not on the legal side of things.
He's not on the legal side of things, but he and I sort of came up with it as a project. So he's somewhat my co-founder, but my developer became my co-founder because I offered him equity to develop it for me. And yeah, so that's basically how our partnership came along.
Okay. And how does that side of things work in terms of drawing up the partnership to be co-founders and offering that equity? Is there lots of legal stuff involved, or do you just say, will you help me and I'll give you X?
Well, I had to learn about the legal side of things. So there's a different sort of contracts, which mean that after a certain amount of years, the person gets an amount of equity, because you don't just give someone 50% of your company or even 10%. You kind of have a clause where it trickles in. So that was what we did, mm-hmm. basically, with a buyout. If he wants to leave sooner, he would get X amount of cash instead. Yeah, that's how those clauses typically go.
Okay, that's really useful to know. I'm sure there'll be people out there that might have ideas that want to do something similar, but yeah, it sounds really good.
There is a name for it. I wish I knew. I heard it on another talk and I wrote it down, and then I went and learned all about the I think learning about the legalities in partnerships is really important.
Yeah,
because if both parties aren't comfortable, they might not even discuss it, but the work just won't get done.
Yeah, and obviously there's the pitfalls of who owns what, and if things go sour, then you need all these sort of agreements in place, don't you?
Yeah, I think you want to do that agreement right from the beginning, mm-hmm. and you want everyone to feel really that it's fair.
Yeah. And is your son enjoying being quite entrepreneurial at such a young age?
He really is. And the things he says are amazing sometimes now. He'll be like, you know, how much is it making? Have you got the money from the investors, or are they still talking right now? And he's learning a lot by just hearing me on the phone and on Zoom calls.
That's brilliant. And how was your first Christmas running Chipping In? How did that go? Was there a big surge for Christmas gifts or at any other point last year?
Well, we did a big Christmas campaign with Facebook ads. So I hired a marketer to run that. So Christmas was busy, but we also worked with schools as well.
Okay.
So we're the fundraiser for the schools, Christmas plays. And so we kind of moved into other forms of anything that supports children. We're all over.
Yeah, I did see on, I think it was on Instagram, that you were doing some stuff with a kids football team. And that sounded like a really smart idea.
Yeah, so teams have been using us to help them raise money to collect things that they're going on trips or anything where the parents can chip in. People can use our platform. We also work with the Kids Network, a charitable organization, and we work with Ultra Education, who help kids get into entrepreneurship. So it's just been really good for lots of different children.
That's excellent, and good to hear that it's having so many different uses. I was going to ask about the global side of things. So if you've got family and friends abroad, are they able to use the platform as well to donate?
Yeah, our payment provider Stripe, and they're global, so they're on the back end, so that's where the funds are held. So we are essentially a global company.
That's brilliant, because you often hear, or maybe years ago you might have heard about sort of family in other countries, say the Caribbean for instance, having to go and send money transfers and things like that, which often sounded like more hassle than it was worth. So a platform like this sounds really, really useful.
Remittances are, it's really difficult moving money across borders, to be honest. So yeah, Chipping In does solve that problem as well.
Excellent. And I saw that you pitched to Google and some other people. How has the growth been so far for Chipping In?
Well, interestingly, pitching to Google and so on was for Cocktails and Conversations.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I think there when I posted that, it maybe didn't line up. People were confused. But that was something I had done when I came up with the idea of Cocktails and Conversations.
Okay.
But it led me into being headhunted by a tech company who wanted to break into the singles market. So then I traveled internationally as their like senior business development person, where I learned a lot about fintech. And that's why I started my own fintech.
It's really good how it's all connected up then. And yeah. I guess the Google side of things must have opened some doors. And I saw that you've done lots of talks and things in the past. My phone's just lit up because it heard the word Google. I've seen you do talks at sort of female conferences and things like that. So how's that experience been?
I actually didn't do talks in them. I organised the female conferences.
Okay.
So when I was working in the startup, which was a cybersecurity company, one thing I noticed was there were very few women, and particularly Black women, in tech.
Yeah.
And it was something that I wanted to address. So the first one I did was specifically for Black women in tech. And I was really blown away by the response. It was so many women attended, so many amazing speakers. And what really shocked me at the point in time was no one from my organization would attend. They said it was too political. And I thought it just lit a fire under me to do more.
Yeah.
So I did more, and I met a lot of really, really interesting, accomplished women. I joined an incubator, hence where I met people from Google. And then, one of the women from the incubator, Bami, and I organized the Power Moves Conference. That's where we invited just a diverse group of women. I think we had about 300 women in that conference. We were sponsored by BT and Eventbrite, actually, and some other companies. Yeah, and that was just before the first lockdown. So that was really important to provide a platform where women from diverse backgrounds could see themselves represented in the tech sphere.
It is so important having people that look like you, and having that, if you can see it, you can be it mantra, because there are so many young people out there that might not know the vast amount of things that they could do with their lives because they haven't seen other people doing it or don't know where to find the people that are doing it.
Yeah, that was exactly what it was. But the thing that still struck me, and that was only a couple of years ago, was it was really difficult to find women of colour who had been financed, who right. had made a raise. There were a couple. They were so busy they couldn't speak. There just weren't enough. And I wanted a woman to talk about her journey in making a raise. And as I've seen now, I've seen more Black women who have been financed, including ones who had previously spoken at the events when they weren't financed
okay.
and are financed now. So I just saw one who made a huge raise, actually. It was amazing, but it's still too few. Mm-hmm. It's far too few women who get funding, and it's far, far too few Black women that get funding, or any women of colour, to be honest.
And in terms of funding, have you been looking for that for either of your businesses, or is that something you want to do later down the line?
With Chipping In, I've been pitching to, I've had quite a few investors approach me.
Okay.
And I've approached investors. It is stressful, honestly. I find Zoom pitching so tricky. It's you feel like you're on a timed pressure.
Yeah.
I like talking to people in person. I like connecting and feeling a vibe.
It's much better, isn't it? Like, I think just through a screen just isn't quite the same.
It's so hard, and you're clicking and the tech goes wrong, and it's just, you're like, I am a competent person. I know I don't look it right now. But yeah, I am currently looking to raise with Chipping In. So okay. That's something, a journey I've been on at the moment.
And I saw you were selected to join the London and Partners Business Growth Programme, which is a free programme that lasts 3 months, I think, supporting startups.
Right.
Was that for Chipping In, or was that for Cocktails and Conversation?
That was for Chipping In.
Okay.
I wasn't an incubator for Cocktails and Conversation. I joined the Hatch Incubator for Cocktails and Conversation. And that one was specifically aimed at women of colour in business. And that was fantastic. I really got a lot out of that incubator.
Mm.
The London and Partners incubator I wanted to join because the startup I worked for had really progressed by joining the London Partners scheme.
Okay.
So getting onto that was it was really important to me, and it did connect me with a lot of interesting people, but it was largely on Zoom.
Right.
And again, it doing anything like that on Zoom, you just cannot make the connections that you would like to make.
Yeah. How did that come about initially, and did you get like a mentor as part of that?
I did get a mentor, and he's a really smart guy. But then I got a really smart mentor from Hatch as well.
Yeah. Never have too many, though.
No, the mentors they find you are really, really good, and they offer such an interesting perspective into business. So, yeah, I really believe in mentors. But it was a really good incubator. It was just such a shame that we couldn't do it more in person.
Yeah. In terms of Chipping In itself, did you have any nice messages from kids or parents that you've helped to fundraise for anything in particular?
No, there isn't actually an actual ability to send me a message.
Okay.
No, but what is lovely is when the child writes up what they're trying to raise money for, you can go onto the website and see a few examples because they're live. So you can make your crowdfund live. So if you go into the marketplace, you'll see some live ones. And the children write what they're looking for and why. And these children are amazing. they'll talk about their mental health and why this is important to them. And you'd realize that the generation coming up now are going to be so in tune and in touch with themselves as people, something that my generation definitely weren't encouraged to do.
I'd agree with that for my generation probably as well. In terms of the ages of the kids that use chipping in, is there like an age limit? Is there an upper age?
To be honest, you could use it. There is.
Okay.
I think your parent has to help if you're under a certain age, because it does have to be transferred into a bank account.
Okay.
But yeah, it's aimed at children, but really the parent has to help set it up.
Okay. And with those live ones, can like strangers donate, or is it just the people you've sent it to?
Anyone can donate. So we share them on our platform. If you make it live, then the suggestion is that all the shares are welcome.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, that sounds really, really good. I'll have a look myself, actually, because there might be some that I want to go and support.
Yeah, please do. I think you'll like some of them.
And I read a LinkedIn recommendation, do a lot of research, which said you wear a calm hat at all times. So how would you say you remain calm when things go wrong? And have there been any major mistakes you'd say you've made along the way?
Oh my God, I make mistakes all the time. I'm dyslexic and I have written the wrong address recently for events.
Oh, no.
I have mistakes like that are commonplace with me. What I think I see and what I see are often two different things when it comes to wording. So I have to really read and reread and check and recheck. That's usually the biggest thing. Sometimes it can really hinder me as well, because I can say tell the DJ a time which is wrong, because details and me are just not often, you know, I'm not a detail orientated person, which people think you have to be in events. So yeah, I have, if someone isn't there or someone doesn't turn up, it's usually my fault.
Yeah, I think people must think about organisation for just people in business in general as well. It's probably been quite challenging for you being dyslexic and running multiple businesses across the years, but you seem to have done quite well for yourself. So
yeah, I think you have to accept your shortcomings and learn to work around them.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing that I may well have made a mistake, I do try to touch base with everybody in advance, make sure that everything's correct, and double check the address, double check the time, because you know, I'm not like everyone else. It may well be wrong,
and then you can minimize those mistakes if you catch it early.
Exactly.
What would you say is the best part about running your own businesses?
It's flexibility. So I'm going to Mexico in a couple of days.
Nice.
And I'll be working from there, but I can do that. I'm always there to go to my son's school plays or take him on his trips, which he really enjoys.
Yeah,
that to me is the best part.
And what are your biggest personal achievements outside of running businesses?
I think when I saw my oldest son graduate university, I was really proud of him. I don't know what would be outside of business. I think it's just really raising two fantastic young men, I think.
Yeah, and that's always great to hear in London as well. It's so hard, there's so many pitfalls and people can go down the wrong path, but yeah, it's really good to hear.
Oh, thank you very much.
What do you do to wind down outside of working?
I mean, I start every day. I get up at 6:30. At the moment, I do like a 6:30 book club.
Okay.
And then I go to the gym at 7:30. I am a big believer in like the first thing on your to-do list should be you.
Yeah.
Take care of you mentally, physically, the rest of the day goes really well.
I really like that one. The first thing on your to-do list should be you. We mentioned mentors already, but are there any other brands or founders that you've really looked up to on your business journey?
Yeah, do you know, and what's been really fantastic is there were companies that were not far from mine in the singles event space, and they were run by women who weren't a million miles apart from me, and they were somewhat rivals. And as I've come on in business, they've become friends.
Okay.
And that's really, it's really cool, because we can lean on each other and we can share insights and conversations. So that's been a really enlightening part of business, is to not really have competition, but make the competition your friends.
Another great gem. Yeah, because it's not all about competing with people, is it? I think you can help lift people up and they can help lift you up as well. So support is always better than competition, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I like to reshare things on Facebook and like other people's posts who are doing similar things. And yeah, sometimes just reach out and say, hi, you know, I love the look of what it is you're doing. Well done. From a very sincere place, because usually you're watching them because they are doing something really good, and giving them a little pat on the back, it means a lot to people.
Yeah. And I think you reaching out to me is part of the reason you're on this podcast. So I think there's always benefits, and it's been a really good chat so far.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
So are there any exclusive announcements for the listeners, or any future plans of where you'd love the businesses to be in a few years?
Exclusive announcements. Let me think. No. In a nutshell, where I'd like the business to be in the next few years. Well, with the fashion shows, we're really expanding that rapidly. And okay. This one is huge. We've got sponsors from the States, really big magazines that are coming on board. I think it's the diversity aspect of that and the inclusivity as well as sustainability has really piqued the interests of big companies. Mm-hmm. So we think the next one in September will be bigger and potentially international as well.
That's amazing. I always ask my guests for recommendations. So are there any books, films, TV shows or podcasts that you've enjoyed recently?
Hold on. Let me tell you. I do listen to a lot of podcasts. Okay. I'm sure you listen to this because I think everybody does who listens to podcasts. The Diary of a CEO.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I like Stephen Bartlett a lot. So yeah, I like to do my stretches with a bit of inspiration. I usually start my morning in the gym with a podcast.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
But then with the book club, I'm really enjoying reading. It's like a spiritual book. So I should give you the name of that one as well. Yeah. Let's go. Do you know, this is also part of my dyslexia. I can't remember names of anything. So this one is called, it's by a woman called Diane Cooper, and it's A Little Light on the Spiritual Laws. And it's all about the universal spiritual laws, basically. So that's something I'm reading. And then in the evening, I always read fiction. I have a huge pile of fiction. So that's usually how my day goes.
Okay. Any specific type of fiction?
Okay. Let me reach for one right now. Okay. So this woman, Bernardine Evaristo.
Yeah.
I'm reading her book, Blonde Roots, which is really good. But the book she had, this is an older book. Her most recent book, this name I can't remember, is fantastic. So if you look up Bernardine Evaristo, like you literally can't go wrong with her books.
Okay. I'm more of a non-fiction person.
Really? What are you reading at the moment?
I'm listening to Shoe Dog. So Phil Knight, the founder of Nike. I always say Nike, but now I'm listening to his audiobook. I say Nike. Yes, sort of like a biography talking about how he started the shoe brand. And he started out as like a door-to-door salesman selling the shoes to anyone he could find. And ended up going out to Japan.
So it's a really, really interesting one, isn't it? I mean, I love a good audiobook, but the secret with reading, and whether it's fiction or non-fiction, but I find fiction can be better because it can be more poetic, is it builds your language skills.
That's true.
And language skills are really important. So as long as you keep your neural pathways firing with a bit of literature, then you're able to express yourself so much easier.
Yeah, I need to get into some more fiction books, definitely. There's a few on my list. I just need to set aside some time. Any TV shows you're into? Are you watching a new series of Dragon's Den with Stephen Bartlett?
No, do you know what? I don't have terrestrial TV.
Okay.
I only have Netflix and Amazon Prime. So I just watched a really good series called Harlem on Amazon.
I've heard of it,
It's just kind of like Sex in the City, but black women in Harlem. That was fun. I really do enjoy sort of women's kind of romantic comedy type shows. I binged last night on a show about people on an island. There were like a group of rich people and a group of poor people, and they stranded them on an island for 6 weeks, and it was Bear Grylls.
Oh, it was real. I thought it was like a drama.
No, it was real. And it was how they could survive.
Okay.
And it was like, who would survive better, the rich or the poor?
Wow, I might check that.
It's on Netflix. It's really, really good. I think it's called The Island.
Okay.
I think. But if you look up like Bear Grylls, it's not only maybe six episodes, but maybe less, but it's really good.
Okay. And I think we're moving on to shout outs here. So anyone else to shout out, colleagues, family, friends who've helped you on your journey?
I think I've shouted out everybody that there was to shout out.
Yeah, that's fine. And do you have any other questions for me or anything else you want to mention on the podcast before I let you get on with your evening?
Yeah, what made you start a podcast?
In lockdown, so in 2020, I was listening to one called Courier. So Courier do a magazine, which is all about business, and they were doing a daily podcast. So every morning on the dog walk, I would listen to Courier daily. It then became sort of weekly, and they've now kind of stopped doing it, but I still get their emails, which are really, really interesting. Yeah, I just like speaking to interesting people, finding out about people's backgrounds. And I also, when I put the podcast out, I really enjoy seeing the feedback and showing the different ways that people can work for themselves.
That's really interesting. Oh, okay, cool. I don't know why I presumed you must have a side hustle.
This is kind of it, but it's not paying me any money.
Yeah, well, in lockdown, I was listening to a lot of talks on Clubhouse.
Okay.
From founders. And that's where I got a lot of the know-how from, because people were asking these kind of questions. And I was writing them down. Hold on, what does that mean? And when I'd look it up, I was like, that's what it is, yeah. I need to do. So I found listening to founders talk, mm-hmm. who were much in advance of me, gave me the know-how, basically. So lots of fireside chats.
And is Clubhouse, is it still as big as it was in lockdown?
I haven't listened to it since.
I downloaded it and I've never used it still. And I know that Twitter now has these spaces, which every now and then, like podcasting ones pop up and I listen for a few minutes, but then zone out. But business ones might be interesting.
So one of the women I mentioned who had spoken at one of my talks, she has just launched and had got a huge amount of funding for, like, in a millions for arrival to Clubhouse.
Okay.
So it's like a black owned kind of Clubhouse. I think it's called Wisdom.
Okay.
So again, I don't really tune into those at the moment, but I would try Wisdom. But maybe Clubhouse is still popping, I don't know.
And where can people get in touch with you personally or sign up to Cocktails and Conversation or chipping in?
Website. cocktailsandconversation.co.uk, chippingin.co.uk. You can DM me Instagram, Facebook. You can go to the websites, you know, all the platforms.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much. That's been a really inspirational chat, and I wish you the best with all your future businesses. So thank you very much, Gaia.
Thank you.
That's the end of another Hustle Up podcast. Episodes are recorded and produced by me, Josh Burrell, and music is courtesy of Hagan, spelled H-A-G-A-N, on Instagram at Hagan_UK. You can listen on all music and podcast platforms, and please like or subscribe to check out future episodes. And don't forget to follow at Hustle Up Podcast on Instagram to be kept up to date.